What's going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome back to another episode of Teeing It Up with CMB, the number one sports podcast in the Southeast Metro Detroit region. My name's Connor. The C and the V is that fine man checking himself out in his Zoom camera. Vladdy, what's going on, man? Welcome back to another episode.
Not much. Have kind of been running through the nostalgia. I was at the Star Wars re-release of Revenge of the Sith for the 20-year anniversary last night. Had a good time, enjoyed that. Kind of forgot how bad some of that CGI is, but how good some of kind of the lightsaber fighting is. Other than that, it's kind of same old, enjoying the nicer, warmer weather that allows us to get outside, playing a little bit more soccer than I have in the past, so that's always been great. But other than that, nothing noteworthy. Kind of excited to be able to still have a basketball team that's season still going, and we'll get to that. But how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. It was just a rerun. They just played the old Revenge of the Sith
Oh
for the
yeah, quite
20th.
literally just re-released it.
Okay. I wasn't sure if they changed anything because when you said you were doing that, I Googled like if that was like if they were re like changing certain things or because I know they did it originally and the only change was and this was the rerun, the re what do you call it? Re-release, I guess,
Yep.
of the original movies when they changed the like the ending scene where like the fire and it had the old Anakin, they changed to the Hayden Christensen one. I wasn't sure if there was any small add-ons like that to this.
I didn't notice anything, and I do think it is quite literally them just saying, "Hey, it's 20 years, let's make some money," because I think they said that this was the best ever box office for a re-release in history. I think they said they made like $50 million domestically for a movie that's 20 years old that everyone's seen multiple times. So
Right.
more power to Disney, you know?
Wait, which one was it again?
Revenge of the Sith.
Okay. So the one where shit goes down.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. It's over, Anakin. Now it's just in my head. All the cool. I don't know how you feel. He's not quite he like that Hayden Christensen. I'm on the kind of the train of I think he ruins those prequels in a lot of senses. Not as much the third one, but the second one. Where it's like him and Natalie Portman for that just have zero on-screen chemistry together, and it's like watching nails on chalkboard.
Yeah, we've definitely had this conversation in person where a lot of those kind of one-liners that he has or some of his sentences are just, I don't know if it's the accent, what it was, but the way the delivery sucks. I'm completely
It's
with
a
you.
bad script at times
That
too.
is, well, yeah, it's not just throwing it at Hayden Christensen, but yeah, the delivery's bad. You're right. Everything about some of those interactions, particularly in Attack of the Clones, is
Like,
awful.
I hate sand. It's coarse and it gets everywhere.
Yeah.
Or the one I like in the Revenge of the Sith is the ending battle scene. He goes, "You turned against me."
It's like I said,
Oh
the
God.
delivery's bad, but some of the script is like this just sucks.
Yeah. But like you said, it's a success in that it made a lot of money and it continued on.
Oh
This
yeah.
it did its job and then some. So.
How are you?
Me, I'm good. Finished law school this morning. So we're officially done. I made the mistake when I went to work after this morning. I was like last ex just took my last exam ever, which is not true because I have the biggest exam still to come this summer. So, just not getting ahead of myself mentally there. But we've got a lot to talk about today so we can get into it. We've got a myriad of playoff between hockey and basketball, the Pistons, lots going down in terms of the NHL, a lot of good series, some surprises so far, and the NFL draft, something we previewed last week's with prefacing that we didn't think it was as sexy of a draft or as good of a draft. And I'd argue from storylines, there's a few that reign supreme, and that's what kind of carries the day. But storyline was one of the more noteworthy drafts we've had in a few years. So
I think that
let's
was a
get into it.
manufactured storyline, but we'll get to it.
Yeah, very manufactured, but like it's the NFL doing the NFL's job at the end of the day. Do you want to start with the draft then or
Why
talk
not?
about
Why not?
I guess I'll let you start wherever you want to start with
Sure.
this. Green Bay, a dud, I thought.
Yeah, I didn't pay too much attention to the actual kind of facilities of everything and kind of what the turnout was. I haven't looked at any of the numbers. I didn't even really do that for Detroit. So it looked cool enough, I guess. At this point, they know what they're doing, just taking the show on the road every year, letting a franchise or a city host
Yeah.
something and kind of keep people engaged, especially during the off-season months. And yeah, but the actual draft, I think they mentioned for the first time ever, they went into the draft with each team owning its own first round pick. That had never happened before,
Really?
and it lasted all of one pick.
Yeah.
But yeah, the number one pick, Cam Ward, I think we'll just probably, as we've done this in the past, we'll just go down the board, talk about what team made what pick, and give some thoughts on like it, don't like it, player, not player, whatever. Cam Ward is chalk. He had separated himself throughout the process with his play, as the number one pick, and the Titans need a quarterback, so.
The only thing I have on that is Warren Moon unretiring the number one for him. Soft, poor franchise move, I think.
Yeah.
What's the point of retiring a number if you can unretire it?
I actually
And I
agree.
don't think he's the kind of generational talent, sorry to cut you off, the generational talent that deserves that. Like, this was no cons I know we said chalk, but this was no consensus number one talent for years on end. This was a guy that played 5 years of college. Like, I don't know. I just
I'm
could,
totally
it just
with you.
really bothered me for some reason.
I'm totally with you. And I guess the one nice thing is it did come from Warren Moon. It wasn't Cam Ward going in the door,
Right.
hasn't done anything. He's like, yo, you see this number one? Can I have it? At least
Right.
it came from the other side.
The
But yeah,
source.
I agree
A
with you.
franchise that doesn't have many of those guys. Like, I don't know. Not like we're not talking about the Cowboys here or something like.
Agree. All right, number two, Travis Hunter. I think he was the expected number two. It wasn't expected to be there.
Yeah.
Jacksonville in the lead up to the draft in the day and then the hours before became a talking point for both trading up and trading down in regards to, oh, well, maybe they're gonna do this, maybe that. And then the Ashton Jeantie name got thrown around for the new offensive head coach. They end up trading up with the Browns. They give up a lot. They gave up their first rounder next year, they gave up their second rounder this year. And I think that's just indicative that you're not going to give up that much capital to draft a guy to put him in one position. I think they do plan on letting him play full time both ways. They said he's going to start full time receiver and do a little bit of mixing into the secondary kind of position, just because I think that's probably harder to pick up, and they're going to ease him into that, is what they said. But I guess I can't fault the pick. I think maybe you gave up more than you really needed to, and if this goes wrong again and you don't have a first rounder next year, your new GM is already starting off on the wrong foot.
Yeah, I think we mentioned that they were going to go some kind of flashy offense and get a toy for Trevor Lawrence and a new offensive coach. And they did exactly that. You mentioned it. It was a lot to pay. I'm a little surprised, not at Jacksonville specifically doing this. I am a little surprised they're going wide receiver than corner personally. Everything I've seen as far as where his talents are, I actually think he's slightly better the other way. But that's incredibly high for it's interesting because it's incredibly high for either of those positions,
Yes.
but combined.
I think for me, it's just more of they said they're going to start him at wide receiver because it's an easier position to pick up on Sundays, where it's instead
Sure.
of you chasing the other guy, you're the one getting chased, and a little easier to do that.
Right.
I
And well, to be honest, if there was a position that you were going to do it, go both ways at, those are probably the two you would pick. Like, they're probably the two easiest to pick up on either side.
I just think it's the two that get you tackled the least, so the one where
That
your
too.
body can
Yeah. That too.
actually withstand the amount of snaps. But
Yeah.
on to pick three. This is your hometown or your original hometown team. I'll let you go first.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have much on it. I think they did as far as the Giants. What exactly we thought they would do in the first round and getting Abdul Carter, you got the guy that, from a draft board perspective, was the next name there. You got the best available. We said that's what they kind of should do with this pick. And then you went and got your quarterback, which we'll talk about later. So I was, we'll get into the second pick when we get into the second pick, but I like that they didn't screw up what I think a lot of experts thought they should do. And I'm not necessarily, I know I said this at the time he got picked. I don't think Abdul Carter is going to be a generational talent. I just don't think he's big enough. It's ironic to say from me about a guy who's going to be an NFL football player because he is an above average human in general. But I watched him quite a bit at Penn State. He's a very good football player. And this kind of goes back to the types of players that were in this draft is I'm not sure you're going to go back and look at him and be, oh my God, third overall is a steal. Like I think maybe he slots a little later in some other drafts. But that's just my opinion. He wore the coveted, that's not a word, coveted number 11 at Penn State. So he's been that guy for a while. It was kind of exactly what I thought they'd do. They did it.
I can't add too much. The only thing I'll say is it's unfortunate for the Giants that that seemed to be a position that is not needed, and there was just no one really else that could fit the bill of, oh, we have to do this, because it was Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeaux already on both edges, Dexter Lawrence through the middle, and you add another edge rusher. Now, obviously, you look at Philadelphia, you can never have enough pass rush, so it's not exactly bad. It's just funny that you were kind of forced into taking something that you already have, and you're a team that's not very good and don't have a lot, but you seem to have the one thing that the position or that the draft slot gave you.
Yeah. But they, I don't know, they covered that end of what they needed in the end of the first round,
Sure. Oh, I don't
arguably,
even mean it like
depending on
that.
the actual how you feel about the actual player.
We'll get
But
there.
yeah, number four.
I think Will Campbell to the Patriots. All I can really say is chalk.
Yeah.
You couldn't get him a
Hopefully his arm's old
receiver. Yeah, you couldn't get Drake May a receiver in free agency. It was you either had to get him a receiver here or you had to get him a tackle. They got him a tackle, Mr. Small Arms himself. I guess the only thing I really can add is as soon as he got drafted, there were a couple of really cool quotes that he had where it's like, if you're a defensive end and you get one sack every 12 games, they give you a gold jacket. If you're an offensive tackle and they give you if you give up a sack every 12 games, you're working at Amazon. It's a great quote. He knows what he's signing up for, and I think he'll be a good player for him.
kind of an exaggerated quote. If you got one sack every 12 games as a defensive player,
No, one per game.
oh, one per game, sorry.
And
Okay.
versus the flip side, where if you give up a sack every game, they're sending you to Amazon.
Right.
That's kind of where he was going with it.
Yes, true. Number five,
Mason Graham.
the first of the Michigan.
Men,
I
the Michigan men.
was gonna say the Michigan group, but yeah, the Michigan men. I know we kind of said talent wise, this is where he would go. I was a little surprised by this one. He's good. He's very good. He's gonna be a good pro, and I think they win the day ultimately. Just a lot of interesting moves, and we'll obviously get to it with perhaps the biggest story of the draft. But this started what was, I think, a series of good moves, and you get a relatively decent value pick at this spot. And like you mentioned earlier, with the number two overall pick, you've got a lot in return for that. So.
Correct. When you package the player with what you got to trade down to still take the player, they prepare themselves for a nice kind of revitalization of the franchise after Deshaun Watson's cancerous contract is off the books in 1 or 2 years, I guess, whenever they have an out. So yeah, nothing to complain about there. You get a big guy, make Myles Garrett's life a little easier.
Yep.
To number six, Ashton Jeanty, chalk. What else are we gonna say?
Yeah, I mean, like, we could bark about how you shouldn't be taking running backs this high, but I mean,
I mean, you shouldn't, and I don't think they're a good enough team to sit there and spend a luxury position, but what am I gonna do?
yep.
Pete Carroll needs some toys, because
Agreed.
God knows Geno Smith's not the answer at winning football games by himself, so make his life easier.
That kind of just put together that they're reuniting in my head.
Number seven, Armon Membu. I think this is also kind of a chalk pick, where we talked about this. If you're Aaron Glenn, if you're the GM there, I don't know who it is. Do you really want to tie your career to one of those quarterbacks that
Yeah.
wanted Cam Ward? They clearly said they didn't. They get another tackle. You could never have enough big people. Love the pick.
Agreed. Eight, first full-on wide receiver of the draft. The guy who kind of everybody thought would go in that number one receiver spot, other than Travis Hunter and McMillan, goes to the Panthers. I don't know how you felt. Like, it is definitely a need for them, and I thought they should address the position in the draft. Again, value wise, maybe not this high. I've told you I'm not the biggest McMillan fan for where he's slotted as an eighth overall pick and the best receiver in this draft, but it's a need. I don't know if they needed it at eight with this player, is my point.
I kind of have a similar thought just because you had the worst defense in football last year. And obviously, I understand you want to invest in your young quarterback who had a great, maybe not great, but had a very good end of his second year where got benched, came back, and really put it together. So I understand why you do that, but I think I'm kind of in your boat where you don't have a second round pick either, and you kind of need to make sure you stop other teams as well. Number nine.
Number nine, Kelvin Banks, tackle, Saints.
I think it's just a very good, safe pick in the sense that we've said this for 2, 3 years now. The Saints need a retool, and you get the very kind of best thing that you can retool with, which is an offensive lineman who you hope can be your blindside protector for a decade.
Right.
Not really, again, not really sure what else to say with some of these higher picks just because they're a little bit more set in stone with the players and the caliber of them.
10, Colson Loveland to the Bears.
Yeah, props to you here. You called it when we were talking. You're like, you know what? I like Loveland more. And you started throwing Loveland around as early as 10, as early as the Colts. So congratulations, man, Mr. Talent Evaluator over here. Ben Johnson gets himself a toy, and he seemed to be doing a lot of that over the draft. And we'll get into more of that. But I mean, I don't know, I can't hate the pick. I said this is one of those drafts where the players at 12 and the players at 30 are not that different. So what am I
Right.
going to do? Sit here and say they was awful? Like, I can't do that.
Yeah, I think I've said that I'm not particularly high on either, but if I had to choose between the three, I think Loveland's a better pro. So it made sense he went first. I don't have anything to add. Like you said, it's just you address the offensive line in free agency, and so you got the excuse to go get a tool for Ben Johnson. That's kind of what this was.
Yep. Number 11, Mykel Williams to the 49ers. I think it's, I'm not going to say chalk, but I think the concept was there is whoever was the highest rated defender on their board, they were going to draft because they need to get younger, they need to get cheaper, and they need to get more depth on the entire defense. They decided that Mykel Williams was the best player on their draft board. He's got all the potential in the world. He's one of those just freak athletes. Now you just need to see production. Can't hate the pick. Can also say, oh, look at this. They got a great thing because, not production wasn't really there in college. So we'll see.
Number 12, Tyler Booker, Cowboys.
So that this was where I think all the talking heads had their first little, oh my God, we've got to reach, we've got to reach, we've got to reach, and we've got a bad pick. I can't really like fully jump on board with that because if you look at the best Cowboy teams of our lifetime were the ones of probably the late 2010s that had three Hall of Famers on the offensive line, and they had all the regular season success in the world. Obviously, it never translated for one thing or another. But I think this is them just saying, look, we're going to commit to getting back to that level. They've invested a lot of draft capital into this position before that. I think it was Tyler Smith last year. The year before that was, I'm drawing a blank now, but they've got three first round picks on this offensive line. They're trying to get back to that level where they could bring in some running back and go nuclear with him, where they can protect Dak Prescott, who just missed the end of last season with injury. So I can't fault the Cowboys for thinking this. Could they have gone receiver? Sure. Of course you can always get more weapons, you can always get more defense, but I'm not going to sit here and attack the Cowboys the way others might have.
Yeah, no, I actually, you make a great point about them investing in spots where they need to invest in over the last few years, where first stretch there, it felt like they were trying to get a little too sexy with these first round picks. And not knowing much about the player personally, I like it's a different direction and it makes more sense what they've done the last couple of years draft wise from what maybe Jerry Jones has done in the past and has done with kind of other portions of the roster.
Last fun fact about this, about the Cowboys, they have three Tylers on their offensive line.
Wow. What's
Don't
Dak gonna do? Tyler, Tyler, Tyler.
Tyler left, and they all start looking at it. Which Tyler are you talking about?
False
So,
start, the entire offensive line.
false
Everybody but the
start,
quarterback.
Tyler. Yeah,
False
so
start, Tyler.
I thought that was kind of funny. Tyler Booker, I think it's Tyler Guyton, was one of the first rounders I was thinking
Okay.
of, and then Tyler Smith. So cool for them there. To the next one, Kenneth Grant, the third Michigan man in the top 13. I think it's a good pick for Miami investing in big guys. For me, with Kenneth Grant, I'll always have the memory of him 2 years ago chasing down Nick Singleton at Penn State. And that was kind of the first time I really noticed him. I was like, who is this fat guy who's running down a running back and a pretty quick one at that? And I reached out to a Michigan friend. He said, okay, this guy's a monster. And so that was my first exposure to him. Great run stopper, great motor. I can't attack the pick. That's bit
Yeah, no,
smart.
I actually think he might be a better pro than Mason Graham.
All right.
I know that's a bit of a hot take, and Michigan fans will probably I think he has a chance to, as I should say.
And
And again,
different types of players,
Dolphins, not, sorry.
different types of players too. So
But
that plays a role in how you view them. So
yes,
I agree.
definitely. Yeah, I think you covered it. Just they needed a defensive player no matter what they were doing here. I know we were kind of in limbo still. What does Tyreek Hill want? Like,
Oh, he's
he wanted to
playing.
leave, now he wants to
He's
stay.
staying. He's staying. They.
Okay.
I don't know if that was publicity stunts or early CTE, but they like. He like came out and said, I want to leave, and then retracted that statement. And they were like, yeah, no, he's with us, like a day later. It was really
Yeah.
earlier in the off season.
They're in for another weird season, I think.
Probably. Tyler Warren at 14 to the Colts. I think you can call it a chalk pick where a lot of people mock this, but you need a chalk. It's a shame that they don't have a quarterback who can complete short passes. But at the same time, I think it's that team needs a tight end. You've got receivers there that all kind of not complement each other, but they can do various roles with Pittman, Adonai Mitchell, and then Josh Downs. Get yourself a tight end because last year it was like Mo Alie-Cox and someone else, and it was a really bad room. The offensive line is good enough. The defense is good enough. Get yourself another position. I texted this to you guys, I think a different friend group as well as. The offensive coordinator or whoever calls plays, he owes it to the sport of football to take some shrooms and design some packages with Jonathan Taylor, Anthony Richardson, and Tyler Warren all in the backfield. I want to see triple option, some kind of army bullshit from the Colts this season with that trio of players.
I'll one up you on that. Tyler Warren was also a quarterback in high school. That was like the fact they used to use all the time at Penn State. So that's
Perfect.
just another element.
Perfect. Whoever calls plays for the Colts, he owes it to the sport of football to design some lunatic shit. He owes
Yeah.
it to football.
I just need to figure out the most important position, unfortunately.
15, Jalen Walker goes to the Falcons. I know this must have hurt them to not
Yeah.
lose goal position. They must have been so upset that they can't go out there to just take Matthew Golden. Let's just keep doing Falcon shit, but smart for them. Take an edge rusher. Try and actually build something on the defensive line that is worth noting.
Actually think if Tyler Warren didn't go the pick before, they would have done something as stupid have been like, we can have two tight ends, right? I genuinely think that. And then
I would have loved it.
they just like saw the last offensive weapon that was like within 10 picks of where it should have been, they were slotted, and they're like, well, guess we got it.
Yes, that's funny. I choose to believe your story because the Falcons are crazy like that. And they kind of did another crazy move that we'll get to. Number 16, Walter Nolan. I think that's kind of a smart move. Arizona invests in a big person on the defensive side.
Yeah.
Try and get a little bit better defensively. Could you have taken offensive lineman? Of course you can. You always got to protect Kyler Murray, who has that more, is liberal the right word? Is loose the right word? Just that more improvisational style of quarterbacking where you're always one hit away from the hospital. So maybe you could have said, "Oh, we need to protect him," but I'm never going to sit here and say, "Oh yeah, you took a big guy, so I'm going to be mad at you." So
Right.
I like it from them.
Yeah, nothing to add. 17, Shamar Stewart, Bengals. I think we got the position right here.
Yeah, I mean they had to, because it's like I'm assuming they're going to hope that this is the Trey Hendrickson replacement. He's similarly to Mykel Williams, he's Mr. Athleticism, but this guy, have you seen his production? None. Four and a
No.
half career sacks in 3 years in college.
So is he will fit into that like amazing recruiting class that Jimbo Fisher had at A&M and just that just never culminated,
I
and he's
think the
off living off
timeline
that
would
hype?
make I think the timeline would make sense, but at the same time with the transfer portal, I don't know.
Okay.
Even though now that I look back when I was going through his stats, I want to say he was at Texas A&M for all 3 years. So I definitely do think that this might be I think you might be right. This might have been that Jimbo original let's go shopping for a recruiting class.
Yeah, that blew up a lot of money in this case.
But yeah, again, I'm never gonna sit here and get mad at someone for taking a big guy, especially when you're already paying two receivers and paying Trey Hendrickson as a cheap organization might not be in your budget. So you say, you know what, we're gonna have 1 year with the two of you. Trey, please teach him everything you can, and then we'll send you on your way somewhere else. So 18, Gray Zabel. The Seahawks invest in the offensive line, invest in Sam Darnold, invest in the run game. Can't get mad at that.
No complaints. Feels like they kind of needed to do that. I know you got rid of DK, but again, like the way the offensive positions were slotted here, it made more sense to do this than reach for somebody as far as a
I
replacement for
also
that.
think that the way the Seahawks want to play football, I don't think they need two high tiered or high
Volume.
prestige receivers. I think you can run
Yeah.
with JSN, the corpse of Cooper Kupp, and then just kind of ride the Kenny Walker, Zach Charbonnet train.
Right.
And maybe make Darnold more of a game manager than the gunslinger that Minnesota had him out last year. When granted, Minnesota also had much better weapons. But
Right.
that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about pick 19, Emeka Egbuka, and this is the first time I kind of shrugged my shoulders and I was like,
Yeah.
was this really what we needed?
Yeah.
I understand wanting or maybe needing to get younger when you have a Mike Evans and a Godwin off of his ankle being the wrong way. But you took Jalen McMillan last year in the draft, and as Chris Godwin faded off into oblivion at the end of last season, McMillan kind of showed what he can show. He did more than enough to say, this is a guy that we can invest in and continue to develop as a wide receiver three and then into a wide receiver two once one of Godwin or Evans goes. And then you go and take Ibuka, which I'm not going to say stunts development, but stunts the just throws another body into the mix. And I think it makes it for a very crowded wide receiver room. I think that Bucks, from a defensive standpoint, probably needed to go that way just because. I don't see this being a big need. Love the player, and he can really fill into that Chris Godwin role. And you know what? Maybe if we take a kind of a page from last year where we all questioned the Michael Penix thing, maybe Chris
Right.
Godwin just maybe his injury is not career threatening, but maybe the recovery is not as good as they hoped, and they realize, you know what? Maybe we can't count on him right away. Maybe he's not going to be the same player. To which I'd reply, you probably would have known that before paying him a multi-year deal.
Right.
But this is the first time I put my shoulders in the air and said, what are we doing?
Yeah, everything you said is correct. And when I was trying to think of what I was going to say, I thought of like, oh, well, a lot of those key defensive players are not exactly young anymore on their defense. But like we just said, that's kind of true with the wide receiver room too. So it kind of back, because I agreed with you. I had the same kind of, this doesn't really make sense, but I almost backed myself into somewhat understanding the pick through that line of thinking.
That's actually a pretty good counter. And you know, you invest in Baker Mayfield, you're investing in your most important position. So I'll still stand by the fact that I raised my shoulders, but I see the point,
Agree.
and I can kind of get behind it. 20, Jahdae Barron. The Broncos said up yours to every single mock drafter who had them certain to take a running back. They get a corner outside or on the opposite side of Patrick Surtain. Can't get mad at that.
No complaints.
Derek Harmon to the Steelers. I think
What?
what?
Nothing,
Oh, I
nothing.
was gonna say, I think this was a good pick. They get younger on the defensive line. We mentioned all of the old guys they had who were like the combined age of 100 last week.
Right.
Shout out to Michigan State. We saw a couple of highlights in the green and white.
That's why I said our boy.
So, we got to take the small victories in life as Spartan grads and Spartan fans. But
We
yeah,
did not have a single player drafted, correct?
I don't think we did. Or no, I think we might have had one guy
Oh.
late on. I don't know.
Okay. I didn't think there were any.
I'd probably buy that, but anyway.
That it ran for another week is the state of Michigan State football, which has the least amount of buzz around it, maybe in our lifetime.
Easily. Yeah, I like the pick for the Steelers. Could they have gone quarterback? Maybe. But they are going to sit there and they're going to keep running their Mason Rudolph, I guess.
Me too.
Omorian Hampton is kind of the perfect player for the Chargers. I know a lot of people said, "Oh, this is the Colston Loveland spot for the reunification with Jim Harbaugh." Obviously, that was gone, and that was a dashed dream much earlier. And with Hampton being there, you pair him opposite Najee Harris, or not maybe not opposite with Najee Harris. I think he's absolutely perfect for the way the Chargers, Greg Roman, Jim Harbaugh want to play football. And he can be the lightning for Najee's thunder for a season, and then he can take over as that kind of full-time three-down back.
And I think they kind of did a perfect job of filling in what they did last year, which was actually very successful. But obviously, before injuries, J.K. Dobbins, and why am I blanking on who the
Gus
other guy
Edwards.
was? And Gus Edwards in that kind of two-back role. And that's kind of how I see these two fitting in again, just like they did with two different guys last year.
Yeah. To 23, the hometown pick, Matthew Golden. I'm not really sure I love this either.
Neither.
I guess when you look at Green Bay, like they have a good offensive line, their quarterback's set, the running backs are there. On the defensive side, they've usually got players on all sides. So it's like, I guess you probably went best available player. And we have said in the past, this wide receiver room needs an alpha. It's a bunch of
Yeah.
receiver twos. So if you
Yeah.
think Matthew Golden's going to be that, I get taking him. I just don't think Matthew Golden's going to be that. I don't think the production was there. I think he became one of those workout warriors in the underwear Olympics, and then he became one of those beneficiaries of there no longer being any football and just some kind of random storylines popping up, and he got propped up. Now, that's not to say he did become Texas's go-to guy. He was very good down the stretch, but if you look at the entire body of his work in college, don't love Matthew Golden being taken. But you invest in Jordan Love. I don't know.
Crowded room for a lot of guys that if you're not sure Golden is going to be the alpha, like you said, to where now that just cramps up a room that was already cramped.
Yeah, and then they double dipped at receiver, taking Savion Williams later,
Yeah.
but so whatever. To 24, Donovan Jackson. After we talked last week, I kind of watched more tape on like big guys that like I assumed would have been available with the Lions pick, and Donovan Jackson kind of became my go-to guy, and I was like, this is the one I want. I talked about the versatility, started as a guard, Josh Simmons goes down and suddenly he's a tackle and they never skipped a beat. I became a big fan and I love the pick for Minnesota.
Yeah,
I
nothing
was
to, they feel like they do a good job at getting these types of
Yep.
like big players too recently.
Yeah, I was a little upset. I kind of we were hanging out at a friend's house and I kind of let out a nice audible fuck. So that was entertaining. To 25, your hometown team comes back up
Jackson.
into the first round and go.
Yeah, I mean, we had them doing this. We didn't have them doing it for this player. And this was kind of the start of the Shador story, I guess you could say. I mean, I guess you could have said it started earlier by the fact that no quarterback had been taken since the first pick. But I don't know how I feel about Jackson Dart yet. Give me some time. Let some stories ruminate about him. I know the clip that's going around viral is him at the Gruden camp, and all that their hard count was just a, or their snap count was just a singular clap. And he's like, Green goes like, and what? And he goes, no, and what? He's just like, that's it. We just clap. He's like, what? Do you have like a double count or something? He goes, oh yeah, purple. We just do this. And he claps twice. There's no snap. He's like, I've never used a snap count before. And all like the football heads were like freaking out. They're like, oh, this guy doesn't know ball because he's never had a snap count that wasn't just a singular clap.
That's funny.
He's an electric player as far as like the upside. I don't know, man. Like he's not the starter day one. You got two quarterbacks this year. It's just what is like it's a low risk, but you also trade it up so that adds some risk to it, move to where you're eventually going to need a quarterback, and now you're just kind of becoming like the Jets and the Steelers and the Colts and just putting a band-aid on the quarterback situation year after year by doing this type of stuff. And that's not to say he won't work out. Like Lamar Jackson was drafted around this point in the first round. Jalen Hurts went in the first couple picks of the second round. So it's not to say it won't work out. It's just, as they say in the Hunger Games, the odds are not in your favor, and you wasted a first round pick on it.
So the biggest takeaway I had was how much of a contract security did Brian Daboll and Joe Shane get that they're allowed to take a quarterback in the first round? That's my question, because this is signing up to be classic Giants have bad season. Mr. Mara gets upset, fires Shane and
Everybody.
Daboll, and now you've wasted a first round pick on a quarterback that was not drafted by the organization and the
And it's
scheme.
probably a career backup.
Yeah, and so that's where it's like, if you know what, if Brian Daboll and Joe Shane somehow scammed John Mara into thinking, oh yeah, give us 3 more years because this is the guy, whatever, more power to them. They got to teach me how to smooth talk because that's some incredible smooth talking.
While at the same time having to play with Russell Wilson this year while your job is theoretically on the line.
Exactly
So
that point. That's where it's like, what kind of job security do these people have? They're operating kind of like Troy Weaver used to, where it was like, oh, I'm just going to keep taking bust after bust, and this is an unlimited timeline. It's like at some point the chicken's got to come back to roost, and you got to have something to show for. And so this to me just sets up to be a wasted pick because they get fired after another bad season, and then you're looking at a quarterback that is not drafted by the GM and the head coach in a year from now. So don't love that. But yeah, to 26, James Pierce. This is another move that kind of I raised eyebrows at because not because of the idea, but because of what the Falcons gave up for it. They gave up their first round pick next year, and then I think they got like a third back, and they take James Pierce, they double up at edge. And after reading more into it, I think I understood it where Terry Fontenot, or I don't know what his name is, it's something like that. If he doesn't have a pick that is in the mid 20s at the earliest next season, he's not going to have a job. So in his mind, getting rid of a 2026 pick, either I'm not here to use it, so who cares, or it works out and I still have a job and look at me, I'm smart. So I understand it at that point. I think you gave up way too much money to trade back, or way too much value, way too much capital to trade back up, but good for the Rams. Classic Ram. They're allergic to first round picks. They made one last year and they're like never again.
Malachi Starks at 27.
It's good player, very good player, just one of those classic doesn't play premium position. And how can I hate a safety duo of Kyle Hamilton and Malachi Starks?
Yeah, I really like this. I think he's going to fit perfectly into a defense that's established and is continuing to establish themselves. I think I said in my prelim that I really liked the player and had him going even higher than this. So I'm sticking to Malachi Starks. I like him no matter where he's going.
There you go. To the Lions at 28, Tyleek Williams. Your thoughts?
I didn't know anything about him, to be honest, when we picked him at first. I saw all the talking points on it being a stretch. And my thought process is as simple as this is we said we wanted a big guy. While we may have preferred that to be an edge or an offensive lineman, at the end of the day, it is a big guy. And for a guy that wasn't, we're not talking about like a round off stretch. We're talking about maybe a couple picks, and at the position was relatively next up to where Brad Holmes at this point, as long as he didn't draft a running back here, would have had my trust in that because it's a big guy. And because Brad Holmes has earned the trust, that I'm willing to overlook maybe some of the flaws in the actual player that people seem to have for now.
Yeah, I like the pick. I kind of mentioned I would have preferred, or I loved Donovan Jackson, but that wasn't available. So what are you gonna do? I did watch a little bit of him here. Let's get the oh look, Vladdy's an OSU fan jokes out of the way now. He's a big guy. You mentioned it's something we needed. Aleem McNeil is not gonna be ready at the start of the season. I don't think people have fully accepted that yet. Maybe they think, oh, well, Aiden will be back week one, and Aiden could have played in the Super Bowl. That means Aleem's gonna be back. No, Aleem's injury was much worse and it came later in the season. So they're talking about him potentially missing half the year. DJ Reader was ass last season. And so you need help in the interior of your offensive line and you or defense offense, like in your defensive line, and you need real help. Tyleek Williams long term sets up as the DJ Reader replacement after this upcoming season of being the big time run stopper. And I also do think he allows a little bit of n obviously not Dexter Lawrence type of disruption, but I do think that there is a little bit more to Tyleek Williams's it pressure and pass rush game than people want to give him credit for that maybe people saw. And so I do like the pick. I think it's a position of need, and especially while Aleem's gone, I think it's short term it helps out, and long term if you can have a Tyleek Williams do what DJ Reader was supposed to, you can free up Aleem McNeil and you can free up Aiden Hutchinson, because there are different ways to get to the pass or to get to the quarterback. It doesn't always have to be on the outsides. Actually, technically speaking, the fastest way to get from A to B is a straight line, and the straightest line is the quarterback, who's in the middle of the line, which is where your defensive tackles are. So I like the pick. We'll see how he progresses, but I didn't really know what else you were gonna do. You look at, like you said, some of those edges that we all thought were kind of like on the board and potential for us. Mike Green, off the field issues with multiple cases of sexual assault against him. That's not on the Detroit Lions draft board when you look at what we've done in the past. So I'm not really sure how many other options there were really there at 28 for us.
Yeah, I like your analysis and I like your geometry lesson.
Thank you. Thank you. 29, Josh Connerly. I think we thought this could be a skill position player to kind of help Jaden Daniels, but there are multiple ways to help Jaden Daniels. Get yourself another tackle. You brought in Laremy Tunsil. You have Josh Connerly on the other side. You keep your guy upright and kind of just all guns blazing for the Commanders.
Completely agree.
They got their sweet new stadium back in DC. They're gonna have a view of the Capitol. I don't know if you saw these renderings. They actually look incredible.
No, but I was at, what do they even call it now? FedEx Field this summer.
Oh dear, that
And
dump.
it is every bit as bad as advertised. It wasn't there for a football game, thankfully, but it is bad as advertised. It's also nowhere near DC. It's a good 25 minutes out of the city.
So yeah, good for them. The new regime's going crazy. Now they just need to bring back the old name. Can't say it right now because we'll get canceled, and we like our podcast not canceled, but when it comes back, then we'll start calling them that again.
Okay. 30. The Bills take Maxwell Harrison, cornerback.
I don't know much about him, I'm going to be completely honest, but at this point, you're so far down. How can I hate something?
Yeah,
Yeah.
you're kind of at the point where these teams don't exactly have immediate needs. So you're kind of just saying, okay, where can we get marginally better with these last few teams, especially these last three teams? So, I mean, it's no longer, and you're also no longer in the spot where cornerback value wise doesn't make sense at 30 as it does at three or four. So, 31, Jahaad Campbell, linebacker to the Eagles.
Yeah, it's the classic Eagles tactic of take whatever talent from Georgia or Alabama falls into our lap. It should be a crazy room with him, Zach Bond, and N'Kobe Dean. I think he's a very good talent that doesn't play a premium position, and I'm sure with the way that things work out for the Philadelphia Eagles and for Howie Roseman next year, we're all going to be sitting there screaming, "How did he get away with it again?" But yeah, I mean, I can't get mad at that.
And then 32, Josh Simmons, offensive tackle to the Chiefs.
A classic Chiefs pick. If he is truly healthy, which That is the big if for him. That's why he
Right.
stopped. If he is truly healthy, if that knee is okay, it's incredible value for them to get a what should be a 10-year offensive tackle at 32.
Yep, completely agree.
Yeah, I mean, that's the first round. I think maybe at this point we just go on to the Lions draft as a whole, talk about the next couple picks, then go around, talk about a couple other teams.
The Lions, where do you want to start with the Lions?
I mean, we already talked Tyreek, so let's just go to the second round. Tate Ratledge. You get your Kevin Zeitler replacement at right guard, another big person, another pick that I liked.
From a big time school.
And according to the super nerds online, the analytics boys, apparently he only gave up one sack in his career at Georgia. Now I understand you're Georgia and you're playing alongside four other NFL picks, so you have help, but that's kind of encouraging to see. He's a RAS freak. That's something Brad Holmes has shown he values in the past. That's something Brad Holmes showed he valued this draft. So we got two big guys with our first two picks, and I'm happy with that.
Kind of exactly what we asked for. We got it.
Yeah,
So
kind of
no
a rare thing
complaints.
for you or specifically me not to complain after a Brad Holmes draft. So that's
Yes.
interesting.
Yes.
Round three, we go for Isaac Tesla. And I know that Teslas are not very well liked, so hopefully this guy can buck that trend here in
Just say
Michigan.
Teslas are that's
Yeah.
oh, he's got the benefit of two
He
uppercase.
does. He does.
So
Yeah,
he's a D3 kid, right? He played at a D3 school and then transferred to Arkansas.
Yeah, he's from Michigan. He played at Hillsdale.
Right, Hillsdale, sorry,
Yeah.
D2.
Yeah, so another RAS freak for Brad.
Between Hillsdale and Tesla, many people are not gonna like his I don't know.
Let's get the puns out of the way. Let's talk about the player.
Yeah.
He didn't play, from what I heard, he didn't play a lot of receiver before going to Arkansas, so that's why some of the production wasn't there. But Brad Holmes was very, very happy to get him. He's like, this is my favorite type of guy. He goes, obviously, maybe it's not the best receiver in the draft, but in terms of what I think we can do with him, how I think he fits into our schemes and our values and the way we can find ways to get him involved with this football team, he loved it. The only thing I can really hate about this pick is what we had to give up to trade up to get him, which was
Yeah.
basically three third round picks with our kind of, I think it was a compensatory selection in the third and then two other thirds, I think, in 2026. So don't love that to trade up 20 spots. You're giving away two thirds on top of your third to still stay in the third. But what are you gonna do? I mean, again, he, as you said earlier, he's earned the right to play around in these later rounds.
Yep.
Yeah. Other than that, I think there was a couple more big guys. I want to say there was another guard from LSU. I think it was Miles Frazier. There was the Egyptian kid from Penn State. We finally got an edge in the sixth round, and I think there was like another receiver later on. But I'm not going to sit here and dissect dudes that were drafted in the fifth round, in the sixth round, because I'm just not qualified to do that. But yeah, I liked the draft. We got big people at the positions or at the rounds of need at the beginning where you expect difference makers. And yeah, I just kind of summarize it as, I'm not used to being very, very happy about drafts. I've been Mr. Grumpy Pants after the last couple of years.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird spot for the Lions moving forward. I'm a spot we're not used to, but a weird spot kind of but we'll get into that obviously a lot closer to the season. But I don't have any major complaints. It is different being, and we're so used to the draft for your team having much more buzz when you have a top 10 pick. When you're picking in the mid to late 20s for the last few years, it doesn't have the same buzz, and you kind of don't know the names as well, and have to kind of read into stuff on Twitter or X or whatever you call it these days. So that was definitely my main emotion out of the draft for the Lions. Last thing, storyline wise, I want to touch on Shador before
Oh,
we forget.
we have to.
Obviously, the biggest story in the draft, whether it's the prank phone call. Or the guy that was projected for some people to be a top five pick, falling all the way to the fifth round, and being the second player of that position taken by the team that drafted him in that individual draft. I think we both are going to agree on this, and I think this is the consensus that everyone had, is I was not confident he was a first round talent
Oh, yeah.
in any sense of the imagination, but I also don't think he's a fifth round talent.
So I'm gonna be a little bit more stern on my assessing of the situation because I think Shedeur Sanders was the imperfect situation
The
where
imperfect situation. Go ahead,
in
sorry.
the sense that everything went against him. You had, like you said, is he a first round talent? Probably not. And then at that point, you start looking at, is this guy a backup? And then you start looking at, if I'm drafting a backup, do I need a celebrity dad following him? No, I don't. Then you start looking at the fact that he was awful in interviews. The Giants one has already been publicized as this guy was awful in the interview with Daboll. There were other ones. There were questions with about whether or not he was intentionally being awful because he just didn't want to go there or didn't think that he'd still be around it when these teams are talking to him. So I think you've got the perfect combination of the talent's not there to overcome the circus and the noise behind him. And that's why I think he did fall as far as he fell. Now you're right. Is he a fifth round talent in the NFL? Probably not. He's hyper accurate. He's pretty good pre-snap. But then you look at the rest of the things, and there's so much that is leaves to be desired. He doesn't have Cam Ward's improvisational ability. He doesn't have Jalen Milroe's athleticism. He's not Lamar Jackson quick. He's not Josh Allen size. He doesn't have the Joe Milton or the Anthony Richardson arm. So you look around and you're like, accurate. I mean, a lot of quarterbacks are accurate in college. It's what other traits can you show me that I can build upon? And then you mix that up with, again, all of the noise, the father who says, oh, I'm only going to let my kid go to a couple of different places. I'm going to be interviewing teams. You don't have an agent. That's another problem. That is, I was reading more into his situation. He didn't have an agent. His not directly, like it wasn't his dad, Dion did everything, but Dion was a large part of the communication between teams and himself. That's bad because you need somebody in your circle who's willing to tell you the things that you might not want to hear. And it sounded like obviously Dion's who willingly would repeatedly say, oh, my son's a top five pick. My son's a top five pick. Dion wasn't going to tell his kid, hey man, like, I'm not hearing the greatest things about you right now. Maybe you should take it a little bit more seriously. So I just thought it was an imperfect situation, and the NFL kind of said, look, I'm not gonna, if I take a backup quarterback, I don't need noise. And I'm sorry I've been ranting. My last example, which I think holds a lot of water, look at what happens in Detroit every single time we lose a football game. Jared Goff sucks. Jared Goff sucks. Hendon Hooker from 20% of the fan base. Amplify that if Hendon Hooker was named with Shedeur Sanders, whose dad has a microphone in front of him every single weekend, has media in his pocket, and can say, hey, man, go plant a story, go do this, go start talking. No team wants that from a backup.
And you make two. First of all, the what you ended on is so interesting to me because the Browns only magnified that by A, taking another quarterback, B, already having the situation they have in that locker room where they have three, I guess we can call Kenny Pickett a veteran now, three veteran guys competing for a starting spot, and now you have two, incoming rookie quarterbacks. To where do you really want to hear that have been somebody that's like, Shedeur Sanders is maybe going to be the third string quarterback this year. So, do you want that buzz around somebody that's not even going to be dressing right now? And the only thing I'll go back to countering kind of your argument is you mentioned one name or one sense of talent in Jalen Milroe's athleticism when comparing what Shedeur Sanders does to guys that were taken in front of him. And that's kind of the biggest problem I had is I didn't even heard of some of the players, the quarterbacks taken in front of him.
Tyler
Tyler Shough, who the heck is that?
Shuck.
Shuck, sorry. And even like you mentioned, oh, he doesn't have the big arm, or oh, he doesn't have the athleticism or the size. Dylan Gabriel has none of them, is left-handed, is older, smaller, and less accurate. It just that's the part that really frustrated me and made no sense to me.
I agree.
But I do
I
agree,
can't see
your
that.
the general premise of your analysis, I think, is right and is what happened. So I
Yeah,
agree
no,
with
I
you on that.
can't dispute any of that. I guess the you talk about the prank calls. I'll just quickly bring that up because for Shador's thing specifically, The fact that you had a private number leak a day before the draft, that was insane. Like,
I
I know.
didn't know they were in a database like that, just
Yeah,
like.
so I know since then that like it's come out, it was the defensive coordinator's kid and this and that, and he saw the number and he took it, and it's like, I don't know if that's like code for him not getting his dad fired and they're just gonna throw the kid under the bus, because what are you gonna do? Kill the kid for making not a mistake, but making a stupid choice. But that's insane that was allowed to happen. And it wasn't just Shador. Tyler Warren had prank calls. Cooper DeJean last year had prank calls. You had a couple of guys in the later rounds who had multiple prank calls. So like, I just think it's like, from the civilization standpoint, come on, guys. Like, you really don't have anything better to do with your lives that you're calling up prospects on draft night, that it's like, hey, buddy, it's Mickey Loomis here. It's like, okay, fuck off.
Yeah, I mean, it created a story. It did. But it only added to the mystique of what happened with Shador in general. So,
Oh, last thing I want to say, get Mel Kiper off TV.
yeah, that was just overly dramatic. And like, and I kind of just voiced a similar yet more reasonable opinion to Mel Kiper. But like, what, like, I think it was Reese Davis was like literally like trying not, and who remains pretty impartial and takes everything seriously, was like trying not to laugh at Mel Kiper during that whole like
Yeah,
rant.
it was awful. And like, I don't want to give more attention to it or talk about it, because it was ridiculous. But just, I don't need to see Mel Kiper on TV anymore. And for a guy who screams a lot about the NFL being bad at evaluating quarterbacks, he once said he'd retire and go live on a cliffside ocean if Jimmy Clausen was a bust. And I still see him on my TV every year, so clearly Jimmy Clausen was not a bust, but okay,
He was.
your talent evaluator.
It's amazing. Like, how do you just get to be that
Yeah, I
good?
have no idea. It's like, if you were so good at evaluating talent, you'd be in a front office. You wouldn't be
Right.
run. You wouldn't be selling articles on ESPN Plus.
Right.
So yeah,
But yeah. But you're what the ESPN, all the coverage goes. I don't know. It's just. It's a fascinating position to be in sports media.
That's all I have on the draft. And anything from you before we close it off, get to the playoffs of the world?
No, let's move forward into the playoffs. I'll quickly do the NHL and then we can kind of, because there's a little more to talk about with the Pistons and stuff in the NBA. Even though I will argue and my rant will be, and you're going to counter with, well, it's been kind of the 1-8s and the 2-7s. That there's been a lot of just unacceptably uncompetitive NBA series in general. But to the NHL. I'll start in the West, where pretty much every series is 2-2 or 3-2 right now. The first, they're playing tonight, game five. That's Winnipeg and St. Louis. Been a relatively even series. I think the main storyline from this, as these have been, the Winnipeg ones have been on a little later, and the St. Louis ones. Basically, all these Western games that start at 9:30, 10 o'clock, I can't do as much of a deep dive into because I simply just don't have the time to stay up and watch those games. But Connor Hellebuyck, who I mentioned kind of doing my preview of these playoffs, has been the top goaltender for probably the last 2 years in this league now, is up for an MVP and has been very bad in the playoffs, and that's kind of continued. And that's why they're in a 2-2 series right now against a team that barely made the playoffs. So that's kind of the big story there. Dallas and Colorado, I mark this series as whoever wins this will win the Stanley Cup. That's 3-2 Dallas right now. They'll play game the deciding game if Dallas wins tonight. This one's been really back and forth before. Dallas smoked Colorado 6-1 in game five. Dallas had a tied series at 2-2, and it only led for a minute and a half in the first four games. Pretty hard to do. They're still without Miro Heiskanen. They still don't know if he's coming back. And on the other side, one of the biggest stories I think I talked about, Gabriel Landeskog had the same knee surgery as Lonzo Ball. He had been out since they won, had not played an NHL game since they won the cup in 2022. He returned in game two to this series, scored a goal in game three. Really cool story there. Like I said, they'll play game six tonight. The next one, Vegas and the Wild, has been one of the more surprising series. I think a lot of people had Vegas running through this one, including myself. And this game, this series has actually been awesome. Minnesota was up 2-1, and Vegas has won the last two now, both in overtime. There's been three overtime games in this series, and it's answer the bell. I would like to call out myself. I said I didn't think the Wild had a shot because Kirill Kaprizov wasn't healthy. He had been healthy for the last 2 weeks of the regular season. So, shout out casual me there. He had been playing. The next one, probably perhaps another, the other most interesting one, Edmonton and LA. I believe LA started this series off 2-0, and Edmonton has won the next three now. They lead 3-2. This game has been crazy. I mean, from game one, LA had a 5-1 lead halfway through the third period, blew it to Edmonton only to win in the last minute of the game. And then they've had several high-scoring overtime games. There's been multiple games where Draisaitl and McDavid go for 3 or 4 points. If you want excitement as far as back and forth and goal scoring, this series has definitely had that. And that's kind of how the Oilers are going to need to play if they want to make a deep run. To the east, Toronto leads the Senators. They were up 3-0 in this series. It's now 3-2 after Ottawa spanked them 4-0 last night. Kind of misleading because this was 3-0, but two of the three wins for Toronto are overtime wins. There's also an overtime loss mixed in that this was a bad series. It's now a good series at 3-2. But every single game minus game five has been a competitive overtime game. Ottawa at home has not really flinched as far as their first time as a group being there. Not a ton of storylines other than just some good individual games. We'll see if Toronto, who is prone to blowing large leads, will blow a 3-0 lead. The rest of the East has been relatively uneventful, unfortunately. You have Florida and Tampa, the battle for Florida. Florida's leading that 3-1 right now. To be honest, pretty much all of those have been bloodbaths as far as blowouts. Tampa's one win was a 5-1 win. The game the other night was a blowout by Florida. The big story there, obviously, Matthew Tkachuk in game four, with the questionable hit on, I think it was Guentzel. And then the coaches went back and forth in the media. John Cooper said, we only hit players with the pucks. And then the next game, I think it was Brandon Hagel, like, did an even dirtier hit on a Florida player. And then Paul Maurice, the Florida coach, just went right back at John Cooper. So bad individual games, good media bits after games. That's how you could describe that series so far. The next one, I'll get to the one that's the only one that's over. Carolina wins 4 out of 5 against the Devils. There were really no surprises there. Actually, I thought in the individual games, and this is kind of how Carolina plays, in that they play the two high forwards a lot of the times. They play man to man in the defensive zone, which is unheard of, is that they're not really prone to, winning 6-1, 6-2 hockey games. It's always going to be these types of bloodbath, playoff type overtime games. There were two overtime games in this series, and New Jersey had a nice win. But I don't know, missing your best player, this is really the only series that I think has gone exactly as expected for me. It was over quick, and I'm going to be done talking about it now. The last one, Washington and the Canadiens, also been a fun one. There was a bench clearing brawl in game three, I think it was. And I'll say this, Montreal, one of the best home crowds in hockey, and they've really come through. The series is 3-1. I just think Montreal just looks younger and not as tough. I mean, they've got Tom Wilson running around for Washington, just taking guys' Arpette's heads are falling off, taking he guys' heads off. And Montreal, with kind of their younger core, has not really had an answer for it. My interesting tidbit is the oldest player on the power play for Montreal is Nick Suzuki, who's 25. And I said that to my dad the other day, and he's like, "Oh, that's not even that impre- that's not even that young." And I had to recheck myself because I am 25 years old. Their power play has a two 21-year-olds, a 22-year-old, a 23-year-old, and a 25-year-old.
That's impressive.
Yes, very young. They've had a ton of like luck with Slavkovsky, number one overall pick, Demidov, their fifth overall pick last year that probably could have gone second if it weren't for Russian. They sometimes you're not sure whether the Russians want to come over because they have such a good pro league there, and it is obviously a huge adjustment to come to North America. But yeah, that's what that series is that they just, I almost said they just tipped off, but they just dropped the puck for game five. I think Montreal gets this done, and you'll see probably a six game series with Washington prevailing. That's the current state of the NHL right now. I was looking for a nice like newscaster transition to let's take it over to weather. Let's take it over to the NBA.
Let's take it over to the places where they do tip off the ball and they don't drop the puck.
Yes, there you go.
We'll start in the West. Thunder Grizzlies, absolute chalk. Ja Morant getting hurt didn't help, but the Grizzlies were never going to be able to compete with a deeper, better at this it, just a deeper, better Thunder. So not much more there. Warriors Rockets, kind of a classic Warriors series. They're playing some ugly ball, and they do just enough to win games with their experience. Jimmy Butler missed the second half of game two. That's the one they lost, and then all of game three. Then he played game four, and according to Steve Kerr, he's not 100%, but it is Jimmy, and it is the playoffs, so he'll be playing. The Rockets don't really know how to score. They were talking about how the Rockets were, I think, bottom 10 in offensive points per game during the regular season. They just supplemented it with great, great defense, and this is kind of where just the ugly basketball takes over, and then that's where you take the experience, you take the best player on the floor in Steph Curry. Draymond has been sensational both on and off the court. He's able to stifle Alperen Sengun completely, and as well as get into the heads of all these young Rocket players with just random screaming, random acts of just tomfoolery. And it's just classic Draymond Green. He had, I think in game four, he had a classic Draymond stat line, one technical foul, one flagrant foul, five personal fouls, and no ejection.
Michigan State's
Yeah,
finest.
Michigan State's finest, but hey, man, he's a Hall of Famer, so joke's on us. Then you've got the Nuggets and the Clippers, which is probably the best series of round one. Every game is overtime or buzzer beaters or this and that. And that was perfectly highlighted by Nikola Jokic airballing a jump shot and Aaron Gordon catching it and dunking it. And then I think it was legit milliseconds where you watch them going frame by frame of the video, and the ball just barely leaves his hands. I'll even tell you, one frame leaves his hands. The LED lights come on the backboard, and they're like, all right, it's a good basket. Classic Jokic fashion. He actually reacted less than Kawhi Leonard. You wouldn't know which team won the game if you weren't actually paying attention or knew what was going on. So the Nuggets have that 3-2 series lead. We'll see what goes
Best
on.
series, you're missing one in the East.
They're playing a little better basketball than we are, but we'll get there. Lakers Timberwolves is kind of similar, I think, to what we saw from the Celtics Mavs last year, where it's just basically hunt Luka Doncic on the offensive side and take advantage of the fact that he doesn't play defense. The Timberwolves have enough pieces as a team to hunt Luka. They're good enough to do that, whereas in the past, some of those times that the Mavs were able to beat teams they couldn't. LeBron has been great, but at age 40, that great's just not good enough. And I think it kind of comes down to what I said about the Lakers going into the playoffs, where they were amazing in the regular season, but they were playing at probably the best basketball they could. There was no next gear for them. Whereas the Timberwolves have Anthony Edwards playing like a madman, continuing his little run of I'm going to kill legends in the playoffs, and I'm going to stare at them in the face like a maniac, and I'm going to laugh at them. I'm going to D'em up. I'll do whatever I need to. Anthony Edwards is incredible. He's kind of becoming the face of the W. I was going to say the face of the NBA.
That's tough.
Yeah. If they can make a finals, I don't even think they need to really win it. I think if they can make a finals with that team, after trading away Cat and becoming a little bit more let's say more spinish and not a pushover as Karl-Anthony Towns is, and we'll get to him. I think you'll probably have him viewed as the consensus face of the league after
Really?
playoffs are over. Yeah.
I don't know if I agree with that. And it's from the pure casual take of I don't think Minnesota is a big enough market to where I don't think he's quite LeBron James legendary. Obviously, you can't say that as young as he is, but like you need to be on that status. Like, look at Giannis. Like, people thought Giannis was going to be the face of the league, and he had his
Is 2 year
year and a
in
half.
one, yeah.
And I kind of feel like when you play him, and well, obviously you're going to talk about Giannis here in a second and what happened there, but I just I it needs to reach that LeBron-esque level in a market in Minnesota.
I see your point, but my counter is going to be Giannis is not an American, and Giannis does not have the personality that Anthony Edwards does. And that's part of becoming the face of a league, is it's not just
Sure.
about the play. It's a little bit about how well do you resonate and how well do you get people to tune in.
Yeah,
But
and
I do see your point.
but like when a guy like Jason Tatum, who maybe not be quite, you wouldn't put him at quite that level with the supporting cast he has, but in that market with what that team's doing, I think to the casual fan is much more recognizable today.
Sure.
And that's subject to change, like you said, if he makes the
Sure, but
playoffs.
I think you could go ask Boston fans and they might say Jason Tatum's not even their best player.
Yeah, I
But I know
agree.
I do I know what you're saying, and we'll see how it plays out. To the East, we'll talk about Boston. Pretty much a chalk series. I'll give Orlando credit for winning one. Cleveland and the Heat, chalk series. The Cavs are just too good for this Miami team that was kind of in purgatory.
You want to hear a fun fact about that series?
Yes.
That was the biggest point differential in the history of the NBA in a series.
I love it.
When you
I
watch,
buy every.
guess what it was?
Oh, it was
Four
like
games.
170.
Okay, it was 122, but
Okay.
still,
I just know that the last
that's
two
over
games.
25 points a game.
I just know the last two games, the Heat lost by 40, came out and said, well, you're not going to beat us in four, and then lost by 50 in game four. All while Pat Riley's just sitting there saying, yeah, I sure. Sh
122.
yeah, well, he's just like, I sure showed Jimmy Butler by getting him out of here. I bet Jimmy's real miserable over in Golden State.
But that's my point, though. 122 points
That's awful.
is unacceptable in a
Yeah,
playoffs.
no, completely agree with you. Pacers Bucks. Pacers were too good, and the Bucks had it all go wrong with Damian Lillard. You missed game one with the blood clot or coming back from the blood clot, and then you tear your Achilles, potentially even ending his career.
Yeah.
At the age of 36,
He's that old?
yeah.
Wow. I
Dude,
would have said
we're old.
32.
What?
I would have said 32.
No, we're old, man.
Yeah. Well, who was the one that I said is only 33 and I thought he was Kawhi? That's
Yeah.
who it was. Yeah. All right.
Oh, Damian Lillard's 34, will turn 35 this year. My apologies. I kind of
Okay.
lied
Come
to you.
on. Give the man some age. He's a
I'm
young
sorry, I kind of
buck.
lied to you.
No, he's a
But yeah,
young buck. Get
let's
it?
get to the real
He's a young
series in the
buck.
East. The only one that has a team get to two games before losing.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that the East's a problem. It's also why I didn't really think much of Detroit being in the playoffs because of how bad this conference is
Yeah.
related to the top two teams. But that's not the point of this. I think the Pistons did a great job of stealing home court in game two. We hadn't even talked about that by the time we talked last week after they had an awful collapse in game one. And then they turn around and they lost both games and both games three and four at home in front of this raucous LCA crowd, seeing the playoffs for the first time in 6 years, making it very hostile. You had the fuck you Brunson chants, the boos every time Brunson touched it, the great pops every time a basket went in. It was awesome, and they just couldn't get it done.
You go?
No,
Oh,
but you could
you're
hear
giving
it.
it praise like you were there.
No, you could hear it.
Okay.
Game four specifically had that awful Tim Hardaway Jr. ending where you're shooting a buzzer beater three, you're clearly fouled. The NBA admits it was fouled, but it wasn't
Yeah.
called. And I actually don't have too much of a gripe with that because throughout those first four games, we kind of screwed ourselves. You lose the turnover battle in every single one of the first four games, three of them weren't even close. You blow leads repeatedly in the fourth quarter. I talked about Cade Cunningham last week. He kind of up until this past game, and this wasn't really even Cade doing well. It was more of Brunson just either being tired or getting shut down by Ausar. Cade has taken a back seat to Jalen Brunson in every fourth quarter of the series. And so I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, well, the referee missed a jump. And it's like, you also have to look at the flip side. We mugged Karl-Anthony Towns for 30 minutes of game four, and he realized there are no calls coming. And so that's when he started drifting outside of the 3-point line and just jacking up threes. So this idea that, oh, there was a little touch foul that didn't get called. Yeah, sure, it sucks. You could have won the game. You could be 3-2 up. But in hindsight, I'm not going to sit here and scream conspiracy and refs favored the Knicks. I was incredibly impressed with how we came back for game five. I didn't actually get to watch any of this. I turned on the last 30 seconds when our Star Wars movie ended. So I can't tell you what happened, but I heard more of the classic, oh, Brunson's foul baiting. Ausar is keeping Brunson quiet. Brunson's legs are shot. He looks like he's not 100%. Karl-Anthony Towns is a bitch. I just kind of heard the classic storylines from all types of Pistons fans, and we'll see what happens in game six. I wish I could talk about them and like what they actually did to win a second game in Madison Square Garden, but I was at the movies, so I can't.
Set the moods.
But yeah, they will have game six tomorrow night. I actually might go to that one. I'm looking at tickets, and if they drop below a certain price, I'll probably pull the trigger. But we'll see with that. That's the NBA playoffs. I guess it's enjoyable to have a team that's still going. It's enjoyable to be the one series in the East. It's not a joke. And we'll see how far that goes. Anything from you on the NBA?
I mean, at the very least, at this point for the Pistons, you've reached the point of this is a very good experience for the younger
Yes.
core they have,
Yeah,
being
definitely.
competitive in a series like this. So,
Absolutely. Yeah, if you made it this far, I think this is going to be one of our longest episodes in a while. Thank you very much. I know Connor has to get to a softball game, so we're not going to hit rambling stage.
gotta hit dingers.
I will leave everyone off with a go Pistons.
It bombs.